How do I grow up to become like Christ? We've looked at one really necessary integral practice, and that is the practice of prayer. And I do want to just underscore this as we kind of, I kind of ran past the end, but I just want to say something briefly. The purpose of this, like everything, the purpose of reading the Bible isn't so I'll know facts. It's to be shaped into something better. It's to grow into what I'm supposed to grow up into Christ, Ephesians 4 says. What's the purpose of prayer? It's not to convince God that he should give me the stuff that I'm asking for. It's that my will would be conformed to his will, ultimately. And yeah, you know what? He's amazing. He's a good father who gives good gifts to his children. I mean, sometimes he says yes to my prayers. And because he's a good father, sometimes he says no. But the point is, in all the things, all the yeses, all the nos, all the I'm not going to answer right now, sorry, all the ways God responds to our prayers is to make us grow, it's to make us better. You know, and I want us to talk about one more really critical aspect, and we're just gonna talk no PowerPoint for this one. If you're there in Luke chapter 10, before Jesus taught them how to pray, he did something else. Luke 10, and you know what? We're gonna start at the end of chapter 9. Verse 57 goes along with what we talked about last night. As they were going along the road, someone said to him, "I'll follow you wherever you go." And Jesus said to him, "The foxes have holes and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." And he said to another, "Follow me." That man said, "Lord, permit me first to go and bury my father." But he said to him, "Allow the dead to bury their own. But as for you, go and proclaim everywhere the kingdom of God." Another also said, "I will follow you, Lord, but first permit me to say goodbye to those at home." Jesus said, "No one, after putting his hand to the plow and looking back, is fit for the kingdom of God." This is that call to discipleship, the call of making Jesus the one that forms your life. It's not your comforts and securities. It's not your family relations. It's not your whatever it was. You can't look back. You look only forward to Christ, who is all and in all. He's the one that I'm following. And that's going to take extreme sacrifice. And that's what we're praying for, is that we become good disciples. But look at what else comes right on the heels of this. And of course, for us, new episodes, chapter 10. Except it's not. It's just the next sentence in the story. And right on the heels of the call to discipleship, now after this, the Lord appointed 70 others, and he sent them in pairs ahead of him to every city and place where he himself was going to come. We talked last night about part of discipleship is purposeful work. This is the parallel account. Luke 10 matches up with Matthew 10 of sending out the preachers and the preaching. But the thing I want to concentrate on in particular, how did Jesus send out these workers? What's the text say? How did he send them out? In pairs. In pairs. I want us to talk for these last few minutes we have together about the essential nature of partnership. The essential nature of partnership. It's right and fair and good, somewhat, for us to think about discipleship as a little bit of a solitary thing. After all, Jesus said, not many walk this road. The way is narrow, and few find it. And father, mother, brothers, they may forsake you because they feel like you've forsaken them to go follow after Jesus. There's a truth to the fact that being a disciple of Christ is a solitary experience many times. On the other hand, there is overwhelming talk throughout the teaching of Jesus, the life of Jesus, the book of Acts, all the writings of the New Testament, that if you're going to really follow Jesus well, it's got to happen in partnership. Jesus sends these men out in pairs. And I think, by the way, the reason I'm using the word essential is on purpose. I'm not just trying to pick a word. I think a lot of us think, partnership, as in other words, really conjoining my life to other Christians, other followers of Jesus in deep, integrated, meaningful ways, that is good. That is good. That's ideal even. But I can get away without it, you know. I can show up, maybe not talk to anybody, but I can show up for the team meetings, you know, or the parole meetings, as maybe sometimes we think about. I got to come to church and check in and, you know, pay my dues and make sure I'm not getting in trouble with anybody. And I'm going to come sit there and come to the information sessions, get a little bit of teaching, then I'm going to go on my merry way. I'm not going to talk to any other Christians that week. I may not even think very much about any other Christians during that week, unless somebody has a real sad, you know, family situation that maybe makes me feel a little bad for them. I pray once in a while. But I'm not, my life is more conjoined to my coworkers or my neighbors or my friends who we do stuff on the weekends. It would be good if I was best friends with brethren. It would be good if I spent all my time, if I was doing things with them day by day, breaking bread house to house and whatnot. That'd be good, ideal, but not essential. And what I hope is that after perhaps as a consequence, or perhaps as this sparks some thought that leads to you coming to a conviction that partnership with your brethren, integrating your life with your brethren, is essential if you're going to be a true disciple of Jesus. Y'all help me with something here. Just as a kind of survey overview kind of thing. In the New Testament, and I'm thinking mostly in the book of Acts, but just in general, how many significant events occurred where Christians are by themselves? You understand the question I'm asking? So I'm going to give you an event that I'm not thinking about. Acts 2, day of Pentecost. What was going on? Anybody remember? Before the Spirit descended, all that kind of stuff. What was going on with Peter? We'll just zero in on Peter. What was going on with Peter? What was going on around him with his life when the Spirit descended in Acts 2? Who was in the upper room?
Specifically, but there were others.
At least the 12. And then earlier in chapter 1, the part just before that, is you got the 120 others. And they were all of one accord. I mean, and the key, that sentence you said, they. Not he. It wasn't Peter. It wasn't that all the 12 apostles were in different places. They were praying together. All right? And then, after the Spirit descended, who preached in Acts 2? The 12. Now, we've got the record of Peter's deal, and I don't know what else. I don't know if all of them kind of had the same deal that the Spirit was moving them to say, but they were preaching. And then, after people were baptized, what was the nature of the early church? Again, cheating, encouraged, open book test, Acts 2, verse 42. What was going on with those who had been baptized? They all continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine, in the fellowship, in the breaking bread of prayers. Day by day, they're breaking bread from house to house and sharing their meals with gladness and simplicity of hearts. All things were common to them. Okay, so here's my point. Acts 2, extremely impactful event or series of events. All of that is in the context of partnership, starting with the apostles, the 120 disciples, including Jesus' mother, and then, of course, those who were saved. All right, so that's an example of not what I'm talking about. That one is clearly significant event, partnership, everybody working together. Give me a list of significant events in the New Testament where someone is alone. Let's see how many we can come up with. This is fun.
Acts 7 with Stephen.
Okay, Acts 7 with Stephen. Good. Why was Stephen alone?
Preaching,
that's right. He was being murdered, right? I mean, he had been arrested, put on trial, and was being killed, all right? Okay, Philip and the Ethiopian eunuch. Now, that one's interesting.
Well, right.
But also, who was Philip with in Samaria whenever he was there? Before he went to go be with the eunuch, who else was there in Samaria? Peter and John had showed up.
And also, there's a sense in which the significant event there is Philip talking with someone else. There's a connection. I know at that point, initially, of course, the Ethiopian eunuch wasn't a Christian, but pretty quickly there he is, right?
When he was on his way to Damascus, there were others who were with him. Of course, they were partners in evil of persecution and such. Right, but that's not about them. So they're not Christians. They were here. He's alone. That's a significant,
but not great. Like, you know, there he's praying and fasting. And what does Jesus do? Does Jesus save Paul by just telling him, "Here's what you need to do"? How is Paul saved in Acts 9? Somebody was sent to him. Somebody who was sent to him. Right. Oh, that's my hand up over here. Maybe not. Yeah.
What are you thinking about? Joseph hit rock bottom. Oh, in the book of Genesis.
Yes.
Oh, right. Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Do you guys notice a little bit of a theme here?
Most of the stories of people being by themselves are not portrayed as like, oh, this is great, or they're very temporary. By the way, remember Philip, did he stay in the wilderness by Azotus or wherever? He goes on to somewhere else, you know? Go ahead. Right. Good.
He was looking for his partners,
and he actually talks about that in the book of Thessalonians, and it's clear that it was a time of anguish for him. We could bear it no longer. We had to be left alone. It wasn't what he was looking for at all, and it was just, you guys can't be left alone. I had to send Timothy to go check in on you guys. Oh, we could go on. You guys get the point, though, right? This is absolutely, it is never portrayed in the New Testament as an ideal thing or a good thing. And actually, it's always portrayed as, I need people, even the Apostle Paul. Do you remember the last significant chunk of his letter that he wrote to Timothy, which was probably the last piece of writing that we have from the Apostle Paul? What's he writing about? Demas forsook me, having loved this present world. This guy's gone here. I'm going to mess up all the names and locations, so I'm not even going to try, but this guy's gone here, and that guy's gone here. Am I right in remembering? Only Luke is with me. Which was bad. I mean, not that I don't know if Luke's a tough hang or what the situation is, but I think the idea is I need that partnership right now more than ever. It is essential for saints to partner with each other. It's amazing how many one another commandments there are. Have you ever checked that out? I want to pull this up to make sure. Well, actually, I can't. Anyway, if I remember the number correctly, there are at least 49 one another instructions, commandments, references found in the letters. I didn't even count the ones in the Gospels. And by the way, some of those were duplicates because things like greet one another is something that's repeated several times in other similar commandments. Love one another, of course, is repeated in a great number of places. Dozens of commandments. How can you obey your king's command in isolation? How can you follow Jesus and do the one another things that he tells you to do if your life is largely, if not completely, disconnected from other saints? We've already referenced Acts 2 and verse 42. I mean, here's this portrait of here's what the early church is. And I understand, okay? I understand a lot of times, and I have taught this, I do, although I think sometimes I do it to give myself a free pass, and I have, so I'm trying to do better about this. Certainly the circumstances in Acts 2 were unique. All the saints had just been, the kingdom is being built, really in earnest for the first time in human history. This is humongous. This is amazing. But then we can say, so that's not very realistic. That's not really something we can do, you know. Well, I don't know, man. Because after that, they all got busted up after Stephen was executed. And then what did they do? They went together to places like Antioch. And they worked together in figuring out how to follow Jesus in their partnership. And all through these letters that were written across the world were saying, hey, y'all need to do this. I really wish that we could get the rest of the world in on how important the word y'all is. Because a lot of our Bible translations use the word you, of course, when really it should be y'all, if we could just get them on board with it. But that's the notion. And there's a lot of things we read as individual instructions or commandments that are clearly collective things. Y'all need to do this. This is something you do in partnership. It's essential if you're going to follow Jesus to be sent out in pairs to work together. Look at a couple passages in the book of Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 3. Hebrews chapter 3. I want to start in verse 12 with you in Hebrews chapter 3. I want you to listen to what the Spirit commands in these verses here. Hebrews 3, verse 12. Take care, brethren, Hebrews 3 and verse 12, that there not be in any one of you an evil, unbelieving heart that falls away from the living God. Notice that's an individual thing. I can't control your heart. You can't control mine. It doesn't matter how much time we spend together. Ultimately, it is up to me about whether or not I'm going to follow Jesus. Whoever wishes to come after me must deny himself and take up the cross and follow me. So we're talking about individual responsibility here. But how is my allegiance to Christ? How is my desire to be shaped by him? How is that cultivated? Verse 13 tells us, but encourage one another day after day, as long as it is still called today,
so that none of you will be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. For we have become partakers of Christ, if we hold fast the beginning of our assurance firm until the end. What's it going to take? Encouraging one another day after day. If you wonder, well, does that mean literally every day? What day does he say we're supposed to be encouraging each other? Look in the text there in verse 13. He actually tells you a specific day of the week that you're supposed to be encouraging one another. Today. So then someone says, well, does this mean I have to encourage someone every day? What do you think the answer is? If it's today, then yes. If it's today, then yes. I want you to think about that seriously. Think about, now we can't redo the past, but we can learn from our mistakes and grow better from it. For the past 7 days, just the past week, have you obeyed this commandment from the Lord? To encourage someone, one of your brethren, each day. Or you're like, well, I showed up on Sunday. I showed up, by the way. More on that. Say, if you want to flip over to Hebrews 10, we're going to go there now. Hebrews chapter 10, I want to point something out there. Hebrews chapter 10. But showing up on Sunday, Wednesday, fantastic. Did you encourage anybody? Yeah. Did you think about anybody? Did you pray for anybody? Did you greet anyone? Did you ask how their walk with the Lord is going? By the way, a good note, whenever we talk to each other, it's good for us to talk about our families and our jobs and what's going on with the Astros and whatever else you want to talk about. But that stuff is not encouraging one another. That's just chit-chat. That's something you can do in your partnerships in the world. Fellowship in the world. Do you share those kinds of things? The things we share, we are partakers of Christ. And we need to be talking about that. Look at Hebrews chapter 10. And I want you to notice what we're commanded to do when it comes to our coming together. Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews chapter 10. Beautiful stuff in 19 to 22. I'm not even going to go there because I'm afraid I'm going to start diving into it. But verse 23. Hebrews 10 verse 23. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider how to stimulate or stir up one another to love and good deeds, not forsaking our own assembling together as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. Don't give up on the assemblies. By the way, I wonder, and this may have been an application of both these things, I wonder if the issue was, hey, I know some of y'all are not showing up for the group meetings. Some of y'all are not showing up for the partners' meetings. Some of you are not showing up to worship assemblies and stuff. I wonder if that was the issue, and I'm sure it was. I wonder if it was bigger, though, that because of the pressures, because of the fears, because of the danger, because of the discouragement, maybe they were like, I don't know. I don't think we'll do it this week. Let's just not. Let's forsake having an assembly this week. We don't need it, or it would be bad for us, or it would be discouraging. In other words, on a collective level, maybe they were giving up on this. Either way you go, the command is, don't forsake the assembling of yourselves. This partnership that you share in Christ is essential. We are partakers of Christ if we hold fast firm to the end. Don't forsake that. But notice, that's the last command that he gives. What's verse 24? What's the commandment there? That we would stimulate one another. Keep backing it up. What's the commandment there in verse 24? Consider. Let's think about each other. Not let's just show up to the group meetings, but let's think about each other. Let's consider one another. You know, I get stirred up, or I need to be stirred up in areas that you don't. And you have ways in which, or areas in which you need to be stirred up that may not be. We need to be thinking about one another and how we can stir up one another to love and good deeds. It's necessary. This partnership is essential. It's something that's got to be central to who we are. So I want to ask this as a thought experiment question. What is it that we actually lose? And think about some of the activities that we do together. And we can start in Acts 2:42. Sharing in Bible study and the apostles' doctrine. What if the only Bible study you ever did was by yourself? You read your Bible. You watch some YouTube clips a little bit of things that people say or whatever. You listen to some podcast, but that's it. That's how you study the Bible. Not doing Bible study with other people, just by myself. What about the work of evangelism? Reaching out to our friends and neighbors with the gospel and You never talk to your brethren, asking them to pray for you or asking their advice. You never ask them to go with you to have a Bible study with somebody or to work on some project and reach. You do personal evangelism, which I heard someone say very wisely, there's no such thing as personal evangelism in the New Testament. But a lot of us try it, all right? And that's how you do it. What about you never really break bread in anybody else's house? You never have them come in your house. And here I'm talking about just meals that we share day by day. You never engage with somebody over a table in a coffee shop or in a restaurant or in your home or in their home. You never do that. Imagine you never pray with someone else. You never sit down with somebody struggling and pray for them. You never have them pray for you when you're dealing with something, ever. You never do that. And we can go on the list, all right? What do you lose? And I'd love it if you could actually think about those things. You may even think about other disciplines of discipleship that we're supposed to do together with one another. What is lost? What would be bad if I never study the Bible with anybody else? You know, reach out to the gospel, all that stuff that we just talked about. What is lost whenever you don't do it with other people? What do you lose? Talk about that first one, accountability. What do you mean by that? I heard somebody right here. Go ahead.
We're all in this together, right?
Okay.
We hold each other up to fulfilling our purpose as disciples of Christ. If I have somebody checking in on me or I'm checking in on somebody else, you know, hey, how can I help you? What do you need?
Yeah.
Here's how you can help me. Here's what I need.
Yep. And how about maybe sometimes I need you to kind of get up in my face a little bit because I'm slipping. That's what the whole book of Hebrews is. It's somebody getting up in the Hebrews' face because they're slipping. I would miss out on that if I'm not participating. Somebody over here.
This is camaraderie.
How so? Talk about it, camaraderie.
Well, it's knowing the other person is there and working in the same goals. You see that. I'm going to pick on a baseball team. Little League.
Yep.
Not the professionals. I'm not interested in them. But the kids getting together, they feel part of the team.
Mm-hmm.
We lose that feeling part of the team.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Good. Yeah.
I think it diminishes your opportunity to grow.
How so?
Well, you know, today all of us are learning from you.
And vice versa.
If we do everything in isolation,
yep.
do we stunt our ability to grow in His work?
100%. 100%. Good. Yeah.
Kind of along the lines, our understanding of the Scriptures can grow. We read something and we hear it and see it a certain way based on our perception or our understanding. Somebody comes from a different direction, sees another side of that multifaceted word. Expands our horizons, expands our understandings, applications, whatever. Iron sharpens iron.
So vital there. This Bible study aspect is really important. And y'all know, you've probably done this, where you're reading the Bible and you thought you figured something out. Maybe you even looked up the Greek word and the history of the thing and all this kind of stuff, and you just are brilliant. And then you sit down and you throw it out there and everybody looks at you and you know these people are good brethren who study their Bibles hard. Some of them know what, some of them can speak Greek and they say, what are you talking about? Now, if you'd stay by yourself, you would just believe that thing. Maybe build a whole doctrine on it. But fortunately, you came together with your brethren and somebody said, hold your horses there. That ain't right. Okay? This is good. We need this and we lose that sharpening, clarifying of working together in this. Go ahead.
So many people miss out in regards to the Bible classes. Because even when I teach, I'm big on asking questions because I learn as much or more from others than I think I know.
Sure.
So, you know, I know a lot of people sometimes are intimidated by teaching a Bible class because they think, oh, well, everybody knows more than I do. Well, that's okay. That's the whole purpose of a Bible class. And so, a lot of people miss out on a lot of things by not going to Bible classes and by not participating and getting that feedback.
Yeah, yeah.
So you want to take a stab at being a Bible teacher, you're building somebody, if you're humble. one time. We used to live there. We were a small town here in downtown. I was teaching. I was doing this one lady. I didn't totally know what I was doing. And she hammered me, but that's okay. And I took it. I said, I told her that's just her personality. She's a little rough edge. But, you know, later on, it was okay. But so what? You know, and you're going to have hard-headed brothers and sisters that like that. Free parking.
And maybe they're doing that because they're really concerned for me. Like, uh-oh, this guy's in trouble. I need to make sure he has a hard stop on this. I've experienced the same thing. I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Somebody over here, maybe. Yeah, go ahead, please.
This opportunity to serve one.
Great. I don't even know what you need if I'm not getting involved in your life. Think about how this is one, I think, some of the things were like, hey, got to study the Bible together, got to worship together. Breaking bread house to house, that's the fun social stuff. That's not that important for a Christian fellowship. Lie. It's not true. We got to do that, y'all. How am I going to ever know what's actually going on in your life? And look, fortunately, sometimes in settings like this, in these kinds of structures that we sit in, people open up and really talk about things that are going on in their life. But usually not. And y'all know it because you've sat here in these nice cushioned seats and you've had real problems. And somebody said, how are you doing? And you say, and I know some people ask that and we both know the deal. That's just a greeting. But some people ask, and you know they actually mean it. They really want to know. And maybe we should just assume we all want to know. And that'll teach people to stop asking that question, unless they really mean it. But maybe more importantly, they'll mean it. And you sat there and you said, I'm doing well. When you're not, you're wrecked with sin, or you're brokenhearted over something, or you're very anxious about something you heard about in your job or what's going on. And you just say, I'm fine. But I'll tell you where you end up exposing yourself of your anxieties, your fears, your failures, some sin. It's when you're sitting across a table or on the couch next to somebody and you had a nice meal and you chatted about a bunch of stuff and you joked around and you talked about your families and your jobs and you talked a little bit about church and they shared something they learned from the Bible. And then you say, hey, you know what? I've actually been. And then boom, here we're off to the races of that partnership in helping each other follow Jesus. We got to make that a real priority, y'all. You get the point, right? We lose so much whenever we don't commit ourselves to what the Lord has instructed for us. And by the way, what the Lord Himself modeled. Jesus could have handled it, y'all. He could have handled it. He could have just walked around, healed people, taught people, game over, done. What did He do? He called some little partners. Junior partners, for sure, but partners nonetheless. He gave them the abilities to do the same things He's doing. He gave them the same message that He was preaching. He would coach them up. He even shared with them whenever He was in times of struggle and trial. They knew about that. They observed that. He was genuine, transparent with them about it. Jesus practiced this. And by the way, we could back it up. You think God needed Adam and Eve to fill the earth and to make everything work out? He didn't. But how did God create all things? He created human beings as His little junior partners working on the earth to fill the earth with His good stuff. This is how God is. God Himself is committed to this. And if we're going to bear His image, if we're going to follow Jesus and be like Him, which is what the whole program is about here, we have to commit ourselves to this partnership. Maybe we could extend this, not extend it very far into what John said. How can you say that you're partnered with Jesus, that you're really committed to being one with Him, when you're not even willing to be committed to being one with people who you do see? Come on! This has to be a priority for us. And we're coming back to where we were with prayer. I know what you're thinking, some of you at least. I mean, first of all, just be awkward. I don't know how to do that. I've never had somebody in my home, or I don't like it very much. I don't like having people in my home. I don't like being in their home. I don't like inviting people out for coffee or lunch or whatever. I don't know what to tell you, brother. Take up your cross, okay? Just do it. We got to do it. I'm sorry. This is the deal. Actually, I'm not sorry. It's important. It's good for us, okay? It may not be very pleasant, but it's good. My son doesn't like brushing his teeth. He's still got to do it, or his teeth are going to fall out of his head, and he's not going to be able to eat, and then he's going to die. So he's got to do it. It's the same for us, y'all. And then maybe some of us are, I don't know how I would do it. My schedule is so full. Well, then chop off your hand, pull out your eye. Whatever you got to do what the Lord wants you to do to grow, to be a true disciple, you got to make some changes. Now, let's brief interlude. Some of you are going to latch on this too much, but I have to say it out loud. Sorry. When Paul was in prison, he was more isolated. When Stephen was on trial, he was more isolated. There may be limited
circumstances outside our control that absolutely prevent us from the kind of day-by-day partnership, fellowship, integration of our lives that we want. But it better be something that we're deeply distressed about. It better be something that we're praying about. It better be something that we're working to get out of so that we can come back to this essential discipline of partnership with each other. I want to suggest some practicalities before we wrap this thing up. I really appreciate the good observations you made, and I hope this is helping you see how important it's got to be. So I'm going to share a couple of things here, just as some ideas, and I hope you'll consider these, expand upon them. You can come up with better ideas, all right? But some practical suggestions that we're going to need to make if we're going to exercise ourselves in the essential discipline of partnership. What if you just said, kind of like, I'm going to pray the model prayer every single day for a month. Each day, I'm going to make contact with at least one Christian to check in, share a word, whatever. So you just go through, you just write down a list, 30 names. And maybe it's not even 30 names. Maybe it's five names who you know you're going to just circle back around six times over the next month. And one time I'll say, hey, I was just about to pray. I was wondering if there's anything I could pray for you today. Wouldn't that be weird if we would do that? Or how about this? You know what Paul did with the Philippians when he talked about their partnership with him in the gospel? I thank my God on every remembrance of you for your partnership in the gospel from the first day until now. What if you actually prayed for someone and then you text them and said, hey, I just wanted you to know, I just prayed this for you. And I just want to let you know I appreciate you. That'd be cool. What if you reached out, said to someone, hey, I was reading this Bible verse. I think I remember you saying you really like this book of the Bible. What do you think about it? I'm trying to figure it out a little bit. Ask them a little question. Or, hey, I know you're struggling. I just came across this passage. I thought it might encourage you. Or, hey, I was just calling you to say what's up. How you doing today? How's your life in the Lord today? Let's talk for 5 minutes. Nothing big. I'm just driving home. My buddy Tyler does that all the time. We never really talk very much. He calls me. He lives in a little college town, and he works for the college there in the IT department, and he calls, and he always has to, either he has to cut the conversation or I do. Like, I don't think we've talked more than 20 minutes in a year, all right, in a single conversation. But it's great. Just checking in, just saying what's up, how you doing, what's going on with the Lord. One of us tells a little something, the other, it's always one-sided, by the way. One of us does a monologue of what's going on with the Lord. The other says, oh, that's great, I'll pray about that, I got to go, bye, and that's the end. Great. Daily contact with at least one Christian. What about if weekly you made a commitment for the next month? Weekly, I'm going to have a brother or sister, I guess in we're brothers or brothers and sisters, it could be a group, that wouldn't be bad, have them into my home for a meal or just to play games, have dessert, something like, whatever, nothing fancy, but I'm going to have them into my house or I'm going to go to their house or we're going to go share a meal. We're going to do something. We're going to break bread together and just spend some time together at least once a week. All right, so once a day, I'm sending a text or I'm making a call. Once a week, I'm having somebody in my home or I'm going to their home or I'm meeting them for lunch or I'm meeting them for breakfast. But does that sound like, I know we're like schedules. Are you telling me really you don't have one meal or after meal block at all? If not, you got to make some changes in your schedule just to make something work. And by the way, I think this is something reshaping. Listen, sometimes I reach out, and I'm bad about this. Ah, you know, I've got this with the kids, and I got this other thing. I got all these appointments I got to meet, and I got to study for this, and I got to prep for that. I'm about to go out of town. Blah, blah, blah. You know what? Hey, brother, I'm here with the kids at the house today. Emily's gone. Why don't you come by and hang out for a little bit? Throw that out there. Cast that net to two or three people. See who says yes. And then you end up spending a couple hours together, and you end up talking about some really important stuff when it was just, we're just going to sit around. That's all it is. Nothing fancy here. Just partnership. Time together, working together, trying to encourage each other. How about this commitment? When it's within my power to do so, I always attend every planned thing. And by the way, I know this is the Saturday morning breakfast / men's weekend people. So y'all are like, dude, back off with the coming to stuff. We're here. All right. Okay, good. Keep it up is what I'm saying. And encourage others to do that. And like was pointed out, there's a big loss when people don't come to Bible class. I don't know if any of you do that. I'm guessing not. Again, Saturday morning men's thing. But maybe you have been, or you know people who are just like, eh, Bible class, whatever, I'm not going to come. Or I got other things I need to do. Make the appeal to people. Don't make your preachers and elders do that. Why don't you come alongside somebody as a partner and say, hey, you are really missing out, dude. I mean, it's like we do this with other things. Hey, do you want to see that movie? No, I haven't gotten to. I'm just too busy. Dude, I'm telling you, you got to go. You just got to go watch it. Why would we not do the same thing when it comes to the study of the Word of God with our brethren? Make the appeal about how good it is. Not like, this is the requirement. Thou shalt must be at the... That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about, this is good for us, man. Well, this will help you follow Jesus better. This will give you more joy and peace. This will make you what you ought to be. Come on. Like, what do you need? You need a reminder? I'll text you a reminder. Come on, get over here. Right? And by the way, we do have to do that sometimes. There was someone in our congregation who, a med student in the third year of whatever they are, residency or whatever the thing's called. I forget all the medical terms, but I've been watching up doctor shows growing up, but you know what I'm talking about. And they're just sleeping in and showing up late. And they were telling me, like, I'm just so embarrassed. Like, honestly, I just feel bad to walk in like 20 minutes late. I'm like, dude, do not do that. Just get here, all right? Just get here. It doesn't matter. And so we had to start, because one time they told me, they came, parked out front, and they were 45 minutes late. And they sat there for 10 minutes thinking about how bad it was to be that late. And then they just went in and drove home. And that was honestly heartbreaking to me. I said, hey, that is not, you got yourself there. You're there. And I'm not saying it's good to be 45 minutes late, but it's better than not being there at all. Just come on in. We're waiting for you. We're waiting for one another. We actually have the Lord's Supper at the very end of our service, purposely because of a lot of situations like that. Not we encourage lateness, but we understand that it happens, especially people not from New York show up and then, you know, get on the wrong train and they're 30 minutes late and they're pretty flustered. We're waiting for one another. Come on in here. And so I promised, I said, look, here's the deal. If you're not there by 5:30, I'm sending you a text. And so we do that now. And sometimes they're like, yeah, I'm just a few minutes away. We got to do that for each other, y'all, to try to encourage each other and appeal to each other to be present at our assemblies with each other. But here's the thing that I do think. I know you guys didn't need to come to the assemblies thing. I hope you don't, at least. While you're at assemblies, make it your responsibility that you have to seek out and have at least one meaningful conversation with somebody there about spiritual things. When I was a kid, we'd have gospel meetings, and my mom developed this terrible rule for us kids. Maybe my dad, too. My mom was the messenger. That at the gospel meetings, we had to meet two visitors at the gospel meeting and report back their names and something about them. Why would you do that to us, Mom? And what my parents were doing was teaching us that we don't just show up to church for ourselves. We show up for other people. And we were in a small church, so everybody kind of interacted otherwise. But I'll say, in a church that I gather is quite large, my guess is there's some people that don't get attention in this church. There's some people that are not paid attention to. Not because anybody on purpose is excluding them, but just because people slip through the cracks. What if each one of us as men said, you know what? These are my brethren. Or there are people who are thinking about me and my brethren who are here. I'm going to make sure that when I show up, I'm going to be during the second or third song, I'm looking around. I'm scouting out. Who am I going to get today? And I hunt them down afterwards. And I say, hey, how are you doing today? And actually have a conversation. Maybe before I even show up to worship, I think, you know what, I haven't talked to so-and-so in a while. I'm going to make sure I sit close enough to where I can catch them before they head out the door and just check in, ask them how they're doing, ask them what I can pray for them. Maybe even do something crazy, like sit down in the pew that second while everybody's talking, sit down and pray with them in that moment. What if I did something like that? When I show up to the worship assemblies, be concentrated on somebody that I actually can help. All right, two more suggestions and I'm done. And I appreciate y'all's good attention. The next to last suggestion I'll make is organize spiritual activities in your home. You know, we talked about just the sharing meals, house to house kind of stuff. What if you said, hey, y'all, it's Columbus Day, Memorial Day, whatever. Everybody's off on a Monday. Anybody who wants to come to my house, we're going to read through the book of James. We're going to read a chapter or read a section, and we're going to stop. Everybody's going to share some thoughts. We'll pray. We're going to read the next section. We're going to have lunch after, bring stuff, whatever. We're going to have some fun. Or what about this one? Hey, everybody. Well, we've had a lot of announcements about some really discouraging things. I'd just like us to get together and pray. Anybody who wants to pray, come to our house, 8 p.m. Friday night. Anybody's welcome. Feel free to bring food or don't. Doesn't matter. We're just going to pray together. Or what about singings? I think are ones that we're... In your home, or if you don't have a home that you feel like could facilitate it, then get somebody else. But I'll tell you, your home can facilitate it. I grew up in Lacey Spring, Alabama in a double-wide trailer, all right? We had bricks around the bottom, though. You know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't any kind of double-wide, all right? Like, come on. Many of my childhood memories were everybody in that little church where I grew up, coming over to our house for Bible studies, Bible discussions about maybe questions that people were struggling with on different doctrinal matters, singings, whatever. People sitting everywhere. People sitting in the little hallway that went by the kitchen around back to the fake linoleum that led to the bathroom. If you had to go to the bathroom, you had to step over people, and they knew how long you were in there, but it was fine. People sitting all piled up on couches and on the floor, and you know what? People didn't want to be there, weren't there. But the people who were partners in following Jesus, they didn't care if they were sitting on that fake linoleum floor. It's where they wanted to be. They wanted to help each other. They knew it was essential for them to help each other. And we need to embrace that too. All right, I apologize for kind of getting preachy here at the end and not open this up, but I hope, I'm not going to allow you to say anything in this venue about your ideas. And your homework assignment is you must speak to each other about how you can work on your partnership and how we can develop this more that will actually work together as brothers. And here's my last exhortation besides the homework assignment. We mentioned this last night. In Matthew chapter 10, the 12 are listed off. And some of this was mentioned in some of the comments last night. There were fishermen. There was a government worker, a Roman government worker. There was a political extremist. There was a Debbie Downer who always was finding the cloud in the sky. There was the guy who couldn't shut up. There were the two guys who had anger issues. There was the skeptic who was a little bit elitist. Can anything good come out of that place? All kinds of different people. And Jesus, on purpose, picked them out, put them in together in this group as partners. The partnership we share is not with people like ourselves. When I first started preaching, I was a senior in high school, and I went to this little church, and my grandparents were there. My grandpa actually developed Alzheimer's, and this church really couldn't afford a preacher. They could only get the really, really, really old ones, pretty much on the verge of Alzheimer's, or teenagers. That was their deal, right? And I'd go have lunch with my grandparents. My grandpa wasn't real, obviously, in it at that point. My grandma would make the food, and we'd sit down, having the pot roast or whatever she made. He'd say, "That was a great sermon. I was wondering about what you said about this one verse, blah, blah, blah." You know what she was doing? She was partnering with her junior partner and teaching him how to preach. I've been trained by a lot of people, but the first training program I had was with Mildred Ward. Whenever I moved to Atlanta, there was this older lady named Katie. And Katie would get together her widow friends in her little government-assisted apartment complex. And every Friday afternoon, till the day I moved away, we'd have a little Bible study. And technically, I guess I was the one teaching it. But mostly it was them talking about their life or them asking me what they needed to pray for me and then me telling them all about it. Then come Monday, I'd go over to Emma's house. Emma was this old Southern lady. Every time she'd cook, I'd ask, "Emma, how'd you make this so good?" She'd look and she'd say, "Butter." Every time. And she'd ask me about what kind of husband I was being. And she'd invite her friends. Anytime she had one of those houses where people just kind of came and went all the time. And there we were having Bible study. And she'd say, "Sit down, we're having Bible study." And here we were preaching, baptizing her friends, all these old folks. Partner, you know what I mean? I've never liked saying I have a best friend. I don't really know what that language means exactly. But I do know one of my best friends, not that we talk to each other late at night or anything like that. We actually don't talk very often now. Was an older preacher named Bill who would teach classes I'd go to. And then I asked him, "Hey, can I have breakfast with you?" And we'd go to Jack's, not Jack in the Box. There's a place in Alabama called Jack's, which I miss very dearly, honestly. We'd go and have breakfast at Jack's and sit there and talk. We'd talk about life and talk about preaching. Before I even
was going to be a preacher. He was just talking to me about things. And now when I see him, we just pick right back up. He's one of my best friends in terms of the quality of what that friendship means to me. You guys get the point of what I'm making? We got to stop thinking about partnerships in terms of who has the same life experiences as me. Who's walked in my shoes? No. Who's walking in the steps of Christ? Those are my partners. And I need to seek those people out. And by the way, those who are wanting to walk in the steps of Christ, those are my partners. Those are my friends. Those are my people. And we need to start living like it. Thank you all for letting me be partners with you this weekend. This is very brief, but I've really appreciated this time together. And I appreciate the conversation we were sharing these studies and also before and after. So thank you all for sharing this and letting me share in your work. And I pray God bless you, and probably a lot of the things I should say, but I really mean it sincerely. Thank you all so much.